Hey, welcome to night school in the middle of a Saturday night school. And I'm going to tell you about a superpower I have. When I see a piece of litter on the ground, a garbage that somebody has thrown on the ground, I have this ability to see that person. It's kind of like DNA technology, DNA tech, or as I call it, Dina tech. She's not just the assistant at the dentist, Dina the tech. It's also DNA technology. Just like how DNA technology now can take some trace amount of DNA and render that person's face. I'm sure you've seen that on wanted posters, on cold case wanted posters. They'll show what they think the killer may have looked like, and they'll show a 3D digital rendering of a face. And I don't know how accurate that is, but we are at a point in time where you can loosely render somebody. You can at least tell what their genetic background is, what part of the earth they originally came from, and that alone can tell you something about the way they look. But I have that superpower when it comes to litter. I don't need to, there doesn't even have to be DNA on the litter. I can see a piece of litter itself, and first I see their hand throwing it, and then the hand is rendered, and that makes its way up their body, and then eventually I can see their face. But the difference between my superpower and DNA technology is I can't see their actual features. I can't see the actual person, but I can see their expression and their demeanor, their, you know, filthy demeanor. Because someone who throws garbage is going to have a filthy demeanor. It's not just the filth that they're dropping. There's going to be something filthy about the way they look. And, it's kind of like how over all, the entire history of time and the human race, people change faces, but there are certain archetypes that stay true. Certain behaviors stay true over the span of many years. It's why you can still read the Bible and take something from it. There are some basic characteristics that just, it doesn't matter what the person's face looks like, the facial expression stays the same, their demeanor stays the same. And that's why I'm able to see what litter bugs look like. To use the technical term for it, the DNA tech term, litter bugs. He's just a litter bug. And it's always a hateful face. I mean, because the kind of person who litters, it's an act of hatred. Even if it comes from total indifference, it's a hateful indifference. But the thing about that, the problem with that is when I see a piece of litter and I render that person in my brain, it's very easy for me to take on this form of meta-negativity and then in turn hate that person. Take that casually hateful action of throwing garbage out into the pure world, and it's very easy for me to hate that person. And what it reminds me of is when you know someone who spreads malicious gossip or they just cause a lot of drama. That person who their friendships are always blowing up, their relationships are always strained, they're always talking shit behind your back, behind other people's backs. And it's very easy to start talking shit about that person and feel justified in doing so. Because it's like, oh, well, that person is so negative. She's just so negative that I, in turn, can be negative about her. And it's easy to get sucked into that. Especially in the workplace, if you have a group of friends and there's one person in the, you know, whether they're an acquaintance or an actual friend, and they're that person, they're that source of all toxicity, it's very easy to focus on that person, especially when you're with other people who know that person, and then you take all that disgusting behavior that you see that person do, and you start to do it about them. And it's hard not to do that because those people provoke something in us. They turn, because what those people do is when you're around them, they convert conversational currency, social currency, into gossip, into innuendo, into just this complaining, and generally complaining about people, complaining about specific people. And then you kind of react to that, especially if you're not completely aware of yourself at that time, you can easily get sucked into it. And you're like, and especially because those people tend to be very strong-willed. So they will convert the entire room's currency into what they want to talk about. And those people, when they feed on that kind of negativity, they in turn feed on this negative currency. And then you in turn have to offer that to them in order to maintain their interest in conversation. You have to offer something, and it's often something filthy. It's verbal litter. You essentially have to start littering about other people. It's like, here's some garbage about somebody else. And those people go, tell me more. Tell me more. And they'll offer something up of their own. And those people generally can't be, you can't trust them with a secret. You know, they will share your secrets. They will, you know, because they're sharing other people's secrets with you. It's a very specific type of person. And most people aren't that way. But as I was saying, those people kind of coerce other people around them into behaving that way. So while there aren't that many truly toxic people out there like that, they do, it is a disease. It does spread. And so you have to be very aware. And so, even though when you're around them, they might kind of turn you into a slightly toxic person, they actually make you toxic even outside of that. Even if you reject that person, they almost provoke this toxicity in you. They almost plant this seed of toxicity that you don't even realize is being planted, because you turn around and you're like, hey, you ever realize Jim, all he does is rag on other people? You ever realize that, oh, and he said this? Did you hear what he said about so-and-so? Oh, did you hear what she said about him? Did you hear what she did? You know, and you feel justified because you know that that person is a source. You know that that person is a toxic waste dump. And you have to be very aware of it. You have to not let yourself then become toxic about that person. And that's sort of how I feel about littering, where it's very easy for me to see that litter, trace it up their arm, see the hand dropping it, see the facial expression, see who that person is, and then be like, I hate that person. I'm just going to hate that litterbug. You know what? I hate litterbugs. And, you know, you're committing a form of, you know, psychic littering in even doing that. And so, you know, part of being a human is constantly keeping yourself in check. And something I just want to add, you know, before I change topics or anything, something I just wanted to remember is I've seen a lot of weed-related litter since weed was legalized here in Washington State. I see the little bags, not baggies, because you used to see, you know, plastic baggies, you know, just generic clear plastic Ziploc bags. You used to see those as litter a lot, and you'd be like, I wonder if drugs used to be in that bag. And I used to go over and look. Are there trace amounts of, you know, is there shake? Is there little bits of green from where the weed used to be? Is there something else in that bag? Was it just a sandwich bag? You know, are there smears of peanut butter and jelly and mayonnaise or something like that that clearly indicates that that Ziploc bag held a sandwich before someone littered it? Is that how you say that? Before someone littered it? Before someone threw it? Or, you know, if it was completely empty, you wonder if it contained drugs. But now we don't really have that concern quite as much because all the weed comes in clearly labeled bags that have the weed strain name on them. Or these little glass containers, these little glass cylinders. Most weed either comes in that or a little kind of a foil plus plastic bag. And you see a lot of those littered out and about. I've seen them on trails. I see them on the street all the time, and it's funny because it goes against the stereotype that, you know, smoking weed will make you, it'll just make you conscientious, man. You'll love nature. You don't even know it, but it'll turn you into a hippie, and you'll be saving the earth. You'll want the earth saved. You'd never litter. A person who smokes weed, he'd never litter. But it turns out they do, and you know what people who smoke weed also do? They commit serial murder. And let me qualify that. A lot of serial killers were big stoners. Among them, Tommy Lynn Sells, Jeffrey Dahmer. At least when he was younger, and he committed a murder when he was in high school, or right after high school. So Jeffrey Dahmer, at least at one point in his life, he was a stoner. Ted Bundy, Ted Bundy was known to be high before he did some of those jailhouse interviews where he was discussing his crimes in this detached way, in this weird third-person way. So even serial killers smoke weed, so it's not that surprising that litter bugs also smoke weed and don't mind discarding their weed-related trash. And I'm not saying that weed makes you litter or weed makes you kill multiple people. But what I am saying is that weed will bond to its host. I think that's one of the key things that a lot of people don't realize when marijuana is discussed. When you strip away all the stereotypes, weed bonds to its host. It's why very athletic people will work out while high, and it will contribute to that. It's why people who are very lazy or want to be lazy will smoke weed and sit on the couch and eat Cheetos, you know? It bonds to its host. It bonds to what its host wants to do. And it, you know, even though for some of us it will take us down a deep road where you analyze every shitty thing you've ever done, it doesn't do that for everybody. Or if it does, it doesn't stop them from doing horrible things, from littering. Because, I mean, I can't even imagine that, being high and littering, you know, I would question that. I would go, why did I do that? Why did I just throw that there? In the same way that if I were Ted Bundy and I got high after killing somebody, I'd be like, why did I kill them? Well, you know what? I mean, it's hard to even imagine going down that road. But yeah, it bonds to its host. But I just had to point that out because it's something I haven't seen mentioned. But just the sheer amount of weed-related garbage I see on the street, and like I said, even on trails, which that one kind of blows my mind because it's somebody who wants to go experience nature, and they want to experience nature high. And weed does bond to naturalists pretty well. Not necessarily naturalists, but people who just appreciate nature. You know, ever since I was a teenager, you go out in the woods and you get high and you just feel like it's the right thing to do. It's the right place to be. So the idea of wanting to do that but also being comfortable littering while you're out there. And let me say, too, I can tell if somebody meant to throw something on the ground or not. You can tell deliberate litter from just casual litter. Like, I was in the woods a couple months ago, and I found part of a water bottle label, a bottled water label. Just part of it, like a small rip from it, was on the ground on this trail. And I was like, obviously, this person, they're hiking, they brought a bottle of water, and the label ripped, and they didn't mean to discard this little part of the label. You know, it's a mistake. It sucks to find that in the woods, but I could tell they didn't mean to do it. Whereas most litter, it is very intentional. Because this might just be another superpower of mine, not just being able to render the face of a litter bug just by seeing it on the ground, by seeing the litter on the ground. This might be another superpower where I can tell if I drop something. Yeah, we all make mistakes. We all drop things. But I can generally tell if I have like a wrapper in my hand or my pocket and it flies out. There's some weird mental connection. If you have garbage on your person, on your body, and it falls out, I can kind of feel it. I don't know why. I don't know what it is, but you can hear it at the very least. Usually, you know, if you're at all aware of your body and aware of what you're doing, you can tell if you drop something. So most litter isn't an accident. Most litter isn't just, they were busy doing three things at once and, you know, part of the water bottle label fell out of their hand because it ripped. I don't know. But, you know, and I can even catch myself right now experiencing that meta negativity where I'm just like feeling hateful about litter bugs. I'm feeling hateful about those people who are hateful. And you see that a lot with the far left. You see people rag on what they see as intolerance, what they see as bigotry. And when you remove all the historical context, you know, all the other, you know, anything that that person is a part of or they represent, when you remove all those things surrounding that person, all of the context, and you just look at the pure energy of it, what you have is a person who is expressing hatred about another person. And it might be justified, sort of like when you know somebody who is just a toxic waste dump of gossip and, you know, malicious, you know, shit talk, just like you're justified in having a negative reaction to them, I believe you are justified in having a negative reaction to somebody who's just an out-and-out bigot. But I think you have to be very careful in the way that you react to that person. You have to keep yourself in check, because what ends up happening is a currency of hatred is created. And even if you feel that your hatred is justified, or you don't brand it as hatred, because that's the thing, is hatred is a brand in our society today. Certain things, certain behaviors are branded as hatred. But hatred is just is a pure, you know, emotional energy. And it doesn't matter what the context of it is. It doesn't matter who it's aimed at, what it's aimed at. It doesn't matter if it has any impact or not, but it is a very pure form of energy, and it's primal, and it does have a purpose. I think you should understand your own sense of hatred so that you can use it only when necessary, because hatred is very useful if your back is to a wall and you have to survive a very difficult circumstance. If someone's trying to kill you, if someone who smoked weed is trying to kill you, if a serial killer is high off his ass trying to kill you, that's when, you know, you draw from your own inner reserve of hatred and you take that person out, you fight back. It's a very valuable resource when used selectively. But you still have to keep yourself in check when you are around somebody who provokes that in you. Even if, especially if you feel justified, because that's the worst of all, is we all feel justified. And, you know, the problem with it too, the problem with that form of meta-negativity, and I would call it meta-negativity when something that's inherently negative provokes you to have a negative reaction and you in turn dwell on it, I would call that a form of meta-negativity, because you're not just out there trying to start shit or trying to be dark. You're reacting to something that pisses you off or upsets you, that makes you excited. And I use excited in the older use of it, because now we hear excited and we think of it as a positive term. Oh, he was very excited. But that term used to be used a lot more just to describe somebody who is excited. You know, they're upset. Excited could be someone who's upset. It means someone who's, you know, kind of bouncing outside of themselves. They're reacting outside of themselves. The problem with meta-negativity, when you feel justified in it, oh, this negative thing caused me to dwell on that thing in a negative way. The problem with that is it's like Emperor Palpatine. You think about somebody who has, say they've talked a bunch of shit about you, or they've talked a bunch of shit about your friends, and you're just finally like, fuck this person. You know, I gave that person a chance, but fuck that person. They've ruined it, and I need to vent about that person. And venting often leads to this form of, you know, meta-negativity, this dwelling upon something. Because venting is good. You want to be able to express yourself. You want to be able to vent. And sometimes you'll justify it and be like, I'm just venting. But I'm just venting becomes, all I want to talk about is this person, or this situation, or this type of person. So it's a slippery slope. Venting is a very slippery slope. Once you climb in that vent, sometimes that air duct goes, it's a downward slant, and next thing you know, you're in the incinerator. Think of it like Emperor Palpatine from Star Wars, where he wants Luke to strike him down. Because people who are inherently negative, people who are toxic, they actually want you to strike back. And they live their life waiting for that. They live their life with this weird defensive attitude that causes them to actually be offensive all the time. They're the kind of people who will react with the harshest shit at the drop of a hat. If you've ever been in an argument with somebody like that, it's just amazing how quickly they can go from 0 to 60, 0 to 100. You're like, whoa. You just had that ready. You were sitting there like you had this you know, arsenal all prepared for somebody just to, like, push you. It's like the guy who's ready to start a fight at the drop of a hat. Like somebody, you know, not bumps into him at a bar and he's just, like, ready to fight. oh, what, you want to fight? You know, it's like that guy, the person who goes from zero to 100. It's because they've been like sitting there having arguments with themselves in the shower. It's that type of attitude where they'll sit there and they'll just be like, this is what I'm going to say if somebody does this. And they're just, they're wound so tight that they're ready to just spring. And they actually want that. You would think they wouldn't. You'd think most people would be like, well, I don't want to go out to the bar and get in a fight tonight. I don't want somebody to talk shit back to me. I don't want to hear that somebody was talking shit about me. But if somebody is one of those people, those tightly coiled, toxic people, they do want it. They're sitting there like Emperor Palpatine, and they're like, Luke, strike me down. Because they want that person to come over to the dark side. They want that person to be on their playing field. And when other people behave like them, it also justifies their behavior. And that used to be my justification for being negative, as I was like, other people are so negative, why can't I be? You know, that's just how the world is. Just how the world is. And, you know, you really convert things to your own currency when you're like that. You give to the world what you think it's giving to you, or you give to other people what you think they have given to you. And that's what littering is. You know, that's what litter bugs do. They've turned their personal currency into garbage because they think the world has given them garbage. Even if they haven't had a horrible life, they think the world is ugly. They think the world is a giant piece of litter. So what does it matter if you just casually discard a piece of litter? What does it matter if you ruin the landscape with a cup, with a little bag of weed, an empty bag of weed? They've turned that into their currency because they feel that that is the currency of the world. And in the same way that a toxic person thinks, oh, currency is gossip. I have some gossip to trade you. Let's trade gossip. And then when you give them that gossip, they can then trade that with somebody else. It truly does become a form of currency. And, you know, for a lot of people too, currency is pain. They're like, oh, my life has been painful. So what am I going to do? I'm going to spread pain. The world has offered me pain as a form of currency. So I'm going to go out and I'm going to give other people pain because that's my currency. That's the currency the world has offered to me. Because, I mean, you think about currency is very arbitrary, even in the monetary sense. Like, oh, someone found gold and was like, oh, this is shiny. Wouldn't this make a cool trading object? Hey, I got some of this shiny gold rock. You want to trade? You know, it's very arbitrary. Oh, we made this paper that looks like this. You know, how is that ultimately any different? Ultimately, I got to stop saying it. But how is that any different from, you know, just ideas or behavior? It's all currency. And it's very easy to not even realize that you're trading in a certain form of personal currency or social currency. It's easy to not even realize you're doing that. I mean, you look at things like the cycle of abuse, the circle of abuse, whatever it's called. And, you know, someone who's sexually abused at a young age is far more likely to sexually abuse others at an older age. And it's because that's become a currency to them. That was done to them, so they will do to others. That's how it's a weird trade-off, because that's what currency is. We think of money as this thing where you're just paying. It's all trading. You're trading that for this. It doesn't matter if it's money. It doesn't matter if you're bartering. You're still trading. It's all currency. And currency is very amorphous. I don't know. I try to be very aware of what forms of currency I'm trading in. Because you can easily become someone, too, who's like, I don't trade in currency. I don't do trades. No trades. You'll see that. It's like at a convention. You know, or a swap meet. It's like, I don't do trades. You got to give me money. But you're still doing a trade, man. You're still trading something. But you know what a very poor form of currency is? Mistaken identity. There are some things that are just a very poor form of social currency. While we're on that note, when you go up to somebody and you think they're somebody else, there's nowhere to go from there. There's no opening there. Oh, I thought you were my friend. Oh, I'm not. and the conversation's just dead. But if you've ever been in that situation before, I haven't been mistaken for other people very often, but I'm thinking of a story right now when I was in college. And there's this guy that I had a class with, not even an acquaintance, but I saw him at a show, a house show. And he came up to me, and he might have been drinking, I don't even remember, but he was just like, he thought that I was the brother of this other guy he was friends with, and I guess I loosely resembled this guy. And he was just like, well, you remember when we had that one class, that Native American class? And I was like, no. And then he brought up the guy who he thought was my brother, and he's like, you know, but he mentioned some story related to that guy, and I was just like, I don't know what you're talking about, man. Like, I unintentionally shut him down because I wasn't going to pretend that I was this guy that he thought he knew. And I remember he was like, come on, give me a break here. And he said that. He was like, come on, man. Like, give me a break here. Like, he thought I was just shutting him down for fun. I don't know what he thought, because sometimes people will do that. Some people are socially awkward or otherwise. They trade in the currency of shutting people down. But I wasn't going to cop to being somebody that I wasn't. But it stood out to me because I was just like, this is like anti-conversation. Just kind of forcing somebody to be somebody that you mistook them for. I mean, it's kind of like when you think someone's waving at you and it turns out they're not, and you wave back and you hate yourself forever. You never forget it. I'm so stupid. I'm such a loser. I thought they were waving at me, so I waved back. That's one of those things that people do beat themselves up over. People will like litter and they won't beat themselves up over it. They'll be like, the world's ugly. But if they mistakenly think somebody's waving at them and they wave back, but that person wasn't waving at them and they feel awkward and like a loser, they'll beat themselves up about it forever. I don't know why. I could go on about that forever. Forever. I could beat myself up about it forever and go on about it forever. What's the difference? Don't go on beating yourself up. But yeah, it's just funny to me how certain things are great conversational currency, and other things are just a dead conversation right off the bat. And mistaken identity is one of those. And the idea of mistaking somebody is funny too. Like, you vaguely look like somebody I know, so I'm gonna say hi to you as if you were. Maybe your demeanor is the same. Maybe it's like me and rendering litterers in my head where I can't see their actual facial features. Just imagine their facial expression and their demeanor. Maybe I have the same demeanor as somebody they know. I had a really embarrassing one, actually, where I mistook somebody's identity. We had a cleaning lady, a Peruvian cleaning lady at a job I had. And I knew her well enough. You know, I didn't talk to her a lot, but like I knew what she looked like well enough. And I was outside of Target. I was leaving Target, and this lady was walking in with a child. And I said hi to her because I thought it was the cleaning lady. I really did. I said hi, and I smiled, and the lady just looked. She said hi back, but I could tell that she was very put off by it. And then a second later, I was like, that wasn't her. And it has that whole like racial aspect where it's like, oh, you think they all look alike, huh? And she did look like her. You know, in my defense, she did look like her. But I remember thinking, oh, that sucked. That sucked, you know, like I'm some dude leaving Target, and here's this Peruvian, I mean, this the lady walking into Target probably wasn't even Peruvian, but she resembled her. There was this Latina lady walking into Target, and I gave her this cheesy smile, and I think I probably even lifted my hand awkwardly and said hi. Probably seemed like I was hitting on her in front of her child as she entered, but I mistook her for somebody else. I should have pulled the same move that guy in college did on me, where I said, you know, like the office lady, you know, I saw you at the office yesterday. Don't do this to me. I know it's you. I know it's you. Don't do this to me. That would have been a great incident outside of Target. I'm sure that kind of thing happens outside of Target all the time, actually. I just would have joined the masses. Yes, it's, you know, mistaken identity, not a good form of social currency. Not a good form of social currency. Not a great conversation starter. Another bad one is, you look just like my friend. You look just like someone I know. and I'm sure I've ranted about this on here before, but it's never true. When someone says you look like their friend or you look like someone you know, you end up seeing a picture of that person, and you never look like them. I think just using resemblance, whether you think somebody is someone you know but you're not quite sure, or whether you want to tell somebody that they look like someone else you know, that's just not a good form of currency. It's sort of like, I just know you'd hit it off with this other friend. You guys would be best friends. Oh, you remind me so much of so-and-so. That's poor currency. That's shitty currency. A million of those is worth like one of something else. You know what I mean? It's like how countries with bad economies, it'll be like a million such and suches, some form of foreign currency, and then you'll find out it's worth a dollar. That's kind of like what when you're using resemblance or similarity to start a conversation, that's kind of what it's worth. But we do sort of form social circles based on common currency. So maybe there is a group of people out there who all get along and they're all friends because they all value mistaken identity. They all value vague comparisons to other people, and that's all they do. They sit around and talk about that in the same way that other people will sit around and gossip. We do form groups based on common currency, currency of ideas. Even if we have different ideas, we enjoy trading those ideas. So I think that's something that you can think about. Because the thing about meta-negativity is it can be a good foundation. It can be a good way to build trust with somebody. Because I've had the experience in workplaces where, you know, you're really frustrated with something or someone at your job, and you need to vent. Once again, we go back to venting. And you find someone who you can do that with. You find someone at work who you can trust with some sort of criticism of something that's been going on in the workplace or something that your boss is doing. And it's very, once again, it's the slippery slope of venting. It's the air duct of venting where you suddenly find yourself sliding down a garbage chute. You turned yourself into litter, where it's very easy once you've established that trust to just talk about that all the time. Oh, let's go out for drinks. Let's go out for drinks and talk about work. Let's go out for a happy hour after work and just spend the whole time talking shit. Because that happens so easily. It's so easy to do that once you've established that trust. But the problem with that, too, is you can end up establishing quote-unquote trust with somebody who's very toxic. And I'm sure most people have worked with somebody like that, where they lure you in. They are often the one who leads you in, and they're sort of the Emperor Palpatine who's like, come over to the dark side, say something bad about the boss, offer some sort of criticism about a coworker. And you think you can trust them, and those people turn around and they tell that coworker, or they even rat to the boss, they even burn the candle at both ends. So it's treacherous territory, and it's almost not worth entering, even though we all have this need to vent about things that frustrate us and we don't want to just stew on them by ourselves. It's treacherous territory to even enter, because even if you do have someone's trust and they can trust in you, it's very easy to obsess. It's very easy to get hooked on that meta negativity where all you end up talking about is that thing that bothers you. But if you can get past that sort of initial complaint, that initial venting, is a great foundation for some friendships. Because once you've established that, you can, and if it turns out you have other things in common or good chemistry, you can build on that. Even though the initial, you know, even though you're both coming from this negative place, it's like two negatives can actually make a positive if you keep yourself in check and you stay self-aware. And you can just as easily, probably far more easily, just find yourself in this abyss where all you do is gossip, all you do is talk shit. Even if it's justified, you can find that's all you end up doing. But you can actually build on it and be like, you know, that might have been the start of something. I mean, some of my best friendships have started out with, fuck this, right? And they're like, yeah, fuck this. But you do something with that. You go somewhere with that. But if that was the foundation, you have to constantly make sure that that's not what you do all the time. Because then you just become those people. You just become those people you don't want to be. And because those people feel justified too. The people who talk shit all the time, something made them feel justified in their life. Just like the person who litters, something made them feel justified in doing that. Even if they're doing it as some act of protest against life itself, they feel justified in doing that. And that doesn't make it okay. Justifying things does not make it okay. It's just how things align. Justification, think about justification like you would in a word processor, where it's the alignment. You can align anything against anything else and justify it through that. And that's, you know, a good reason to keep yourself in check, because you can always rationalize things, you can always justify them.
This land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave, this golden land to me. And when the morning sun reveals her hills and plains, I see a land where children can run free. So take